Thank you. I'm Mac, and I'm an alcoholic. My goal in life was to get up here without knocking that tree off the back of the podium. And I'm not going to tell my mother I'm up here in front of a judge because it would kill her. She's finally gotten over worrying about me being in front of judges, you know. I want to thank Diana and the committee very much for having me here. I really do appreciate it. I don't know if it's going to do anything for you, but it does a world of good for me. I like what you said about when you got here, you hated men, women, and children. Well, I hated women and children.
I lied.
And I've been around long enough now to where I don't hate women. So I'm growing, you know. Probably would have been better if I'd have hated men, but it didn't work that way. When I started drinking, I was so young that I didn't even know that it was supposed to be bad for you. I don't remember anything back when I started drinking like they have on TV now, you know, about how it's okay not to drink and just say no and all this sort of stuff, because Betty Ford hadn't done her thing, and it wasn't chic to be alcoholic back then. You know, now it's almost like tabloid stuff, you know. I'm an alcoholic, Liza, Liz, and me, you know. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, none of that had happened yet, and I didn't know that it was okay to be alcoholic. I really didn't. I didn't know it was okay to be alcoholic. I knew I was not okay, and I know I have done a lot to further the cause of no DUIs just in not doing it myself. That machine wouldn't have stopped me. I don't know about you guys. And I would have had some guy sitting next to me blowing in it every 30 minutes or whatever. Here, blow in this, and I'll let... No, I won't get any further than that. But, couple of disclaimers before I go any further. I'm really glad the big book says that we don't have to be saints, because I am not. And if I let slip with a bad word, I don't do it on purpose. I'm much better than I ever used to be. I used to have a 3-word vocabulary, and none of them are printable. And if one of them falls out, I'm sorry, you know. Also, I do have drugs in my story, and I'm sorry if that bothers some of you, like AA purists, you know. This always ticks them off, but frankly, I think you're jealous that you didn't do enough drugs to get here at 22 like I did instead of 52 like some of you did. So. Yeah, and then I look around. Whoops, who's going to be after me after the meeting? Lecture me on respecting my elders. I had an old-timer come up to me after a meeting a couple of years ago, and he was very angry at something I had said, and I can't just leave something alone. You know, I can't just say something and leave it alone. I got to just a little further in. And what I had said was that I never want to be the kind of old-timer that will fly across country to speak but will not walk across the street to help a newcomer. Okay, and I mean that. And this old guy came up to me after that meeting, and he said, God darn it, he'd done his time 12-stepping, and it was up to us young people to do it and stuff. And I just couldn't let it go, you know, and I had to ask the guy if he had happy sobriety or thin, blue-lipped, nasty, gnarly-fingered, hanging on to his ass sobriety. And that made him even madder, and the discussion ended, you know. I just can't leave it alone, you know. God, your weather is so nice here. You know, I get on the plane in Las Vegas, and it's like, you know, it's like 108,000 degrees, and I get off here, and it's all nice and cool, and I'm in Burbank. And I don't know where Burbank is, and I have to get this car and come to Lancaster, and I don't know where Lancaster is. And thank you very much for sending me that wonderful map, because it was a piece of cake. But I have to confess something to you. I'm terrified of freeways. Terrified of freeways. I don't know why. I just am. It's one of those unreasonable fears, and sometimes I'll really let it take off, usually when I'm on a freeway. I'll be gripping the wheel, you know, and the next thing you know, I have envisioned the horrible, bloody, messy accident that's going to take my life, you know. And I get scared, and I want to stop, and you can't on a freeway, especially here in California, because no one around me was stopping. So God and I got real close on the way up here, and I'm sorry if I sound distracted tonight, but I just have to know if OJ's out of gas yet. Does anybody know? Is it over? This is great. I mean, I was telling Diana in the hotel room, isn't this great that the biggest thing on the news today is this guy running from the law, you know? There's no nuclear bombs dropping. There's no epidemics that are new. I mean, nothing really is happening. So we're following an ex-football player who got kicked off at his old lady and blew her away, and who's running away in a quite dramatic fashion. Now, I love that because I have never done anything anonymously. I have always been extremely into the drama of life. Most of us are. Have you noticed that? You very rarely see, you know, these little quiet, shy types in AA. This is my opinion. Well, everything I say is my opinion because I don't have any original thought. I just get stuff from other people and it sounds good, so I say it again. And I like some of these women who come into AA and they have this little persona, you know. And I look at them and I think, oh, I hope nobody's buying that. Because I have yet to meet a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous who doesn't have brass balls about this big. We don't survive out there without them, all right? So this, you know, this little is just another way of manipulating. Yeah. I just didn't use that one. It's like I told Diana at dinner night, I left my mug, and they're looking at me like, you left your mug, and I'm like, hey, I'm blonde. It's been an excuse all my life, and I'm going to use it, okay, as long as I can. The one excuse I do not tolerate is, hey, I'm an alcoholic. Nothing aggravates me more than that. I act that way because I'm alcoholic. So am I. I don't act like that. My favorite, personal favorite is, I act that way because I come from a dysfunctional family. So, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they had not yet invented the word dysfunctional. But I really like it. Because I finally realized that what I have been all my life is dysfunctional. My family was absolutely normal. I come from Beaver Cleaver. Really, I do. Really, I do. There are no alcoholics. There are no convicts. There's no... my father's a banker. My mother was a school teacher. My brother went to the Naval Academy. My sister was a cheerleader. And then there's me. And I would love to be someone who could say I am the way I am because I come from a dysfunctional family. That'd be great. I tried that first 2-3 times in the nut house, saying that it was somebody else's fault. But the reality of the situation is I am the way I am because I happen to be born alcoholic. I really believe that. I exhibited, you know, I was looking at a photo album at home in Colorado a couple of weeks ago, and there was a picture of me, and I was like not even a week old in this picture, and I looked like this. And I thought, my God, I was pissed off from birth. You know? I was like, I was mad from the moment I was born. And all the way through there, these little kid pictures, I'm mad, you know? And I read a diary from when I was 12 years old, and I was mad. And I think that's like the base. I was mad from the get-go. I was mad that people didn't like me, even my family. I was mad that I didn't fit in anywhere. I was mad that I never felt happy. I was mad that I never felt like I belonged. I was mad all the time, you know, all the time. And I had no reason to be. I had a good upbringing. They gave me everything I needed. They gave me most of what I wanted. I went to good schools, you know. But there was this thing inside of me that said I was never going to get whatever it was I thought I was supposed to. You know, I was never going to fit in. I was never going to belong. Nobody would ever like me. I was never going to be normal, which I realize today is not necessarily a bad thing, but because I don't even know what it is. But I, from the very beginning, I can remember feeling alienated, and it didn't have anything to do with the thing around me, you know. It had to do with something going on in here, and I don't know what happened. It just was there. And when I drank, that went away. And all of a sudden, I was popular, and I was witty, and I was sexy, and people wanted to be around me. And it was magic from the get-go, from the get-go. I drank alcohol because of the way alcohol made me feel. Okay, I don't understand people who drink alcohol for any other reason. They aggravate me. My mother's one of those people. She has a glass of wine at dinner. And you ever have dinner with people who are non-alcoholic and they order wine? Have you ever noticed that about 20 minutes through the meal, you're not paying any attention to the conversation? You've stopped eating your food. You're looking at their glass of wine. Have you ever done that? And it's not moving. And you're looking, you know, it's not moving. And I said to my mother, are you going to drink that? No. Why not? Because I'm feeling it. Well, now, why would you drink it if you didn't want to feel it? If you're thirsty, have water and leave the wine to the professionals. Alcohol is wasted on those people. My other favorite is, no, I've had enough. At half a glass of wine, I've had enough. I've never had enough of anything that I liked. Nothing. I don't even know what enough means. Did you ever have enough? Until the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not have enough to drink. And I doubted it for a couple of years in AA. I thought maybe I came here a little too early. I really did. Because I was very young. I was 22 when I got sober, and I had been in the nut house 3 times by this point. And for those of you that have never been in the nut house, I really almost feel sorry for you, because it's a fabulous experience. It's better than Club Med. You know what I mean. It's everybody's going, until you've done Thorazine. You haven't done it all. And I loved it in the nut house, I did. Of course, we snuck booze in there. Booze is a nice kicker to Thorazine. But I would get well in the nut house, you know. I would be driven to the nut house by these feelings of absolute terror, abject terror that my life was going to continue the way that it was. You know what I mean? Your life hurts so bad, and you just can't stand it for another minute. But I couldn't kill myself properly because I slashed the wrong direction. So I had to go to the nut house to learn how to slash the right direction. But then I didn't die and had to go back to the nut house. It was also a good way of getting attention. One New Year's Eve, I went into the nut house in restraints with my family following behind. You know, I know that's one Christmas they'll never forget. It was a great place. Every time they went to let me out of the nut house, I would have to slash my wrist or something so they would keep me, because I could not handle the idea of having to go back out there and do this life thing, because it's not comfortable. It's acutely uncomfortable, okay? I have a problem in every area of my life. I don't do anything right except drink, okay? I drink extremely well. I am a good drinker. I can drink anybody under the table, and I used to make a lot of money drinking guys like you, that big, right under the table. People would pay me a lot of money to do that, because here's this little tiny blonde girl, you know, and these great big guys, and they'd be laying on the floor, and people would be giving me money. I thought that that was great. You know, I saw this television commercial a couple of years ago where the lady's in this black velvet. I don't know if you've seen this. And she's stunning. I mean, long black velvet. And they have the violins and everything are playing. And here comes the guy in the tuxedo, you know, and he's like studly, you know, gorgeous. And they're going towards each other and the violins are playing. And they clink their champagne glasses and you see all little bubblies and stuff. And that is how I wanted to drink. That is how I pictured myself when I drank. But the reality of the situation is, I put my head back on the bar. They dumped tequila and triple sec into it. I sit up and go, and swallow, and turn into the biker bitch from hell. Instantly. There's nothing even remotely elegant about the way that I drink. I am verbally and physically abusive to anyone who is unfortunate enough to be in my circle when I'm drinking. And the bigger you are, the harder you fall, you know? Those long neck, low and brows, when they're full, make formidable weapons. I know. And after the nut house the third time, I realized that perhaps there was not going to be an answer for me, because I'd tried it. I'd been psychoanalyzed out the wazoo. Now, I have nothing against therapy. It's another of my favorite words. Therapy. So we can deal with some issues. 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 When I came into AA, those were character defects. Now they're issues.
The psychotherapy is a good thing. It really is. Shrinks do wonderful, wonderful, wonderful work, but they can't get you sober. All right? And my shrink did wonderful, wonderful. You know, I am really quite aware of why I ever did just about anything I ever did in my entire life. It did not stop me from drinking. Okay, I knew why I was miserable. I knew why nobody liked me. I knew why I was the way I was, and it didn't stop me from drinking. Okay, so now you have this very aware person who is still drunk and miserable all the time. What do you do now? Okay, well, you try and kill yourself. Makes sense to me. So I did, and several times, more than a dozen. And I noticed something many years later about my suicide attempts that was very interesting. Looking back, and there had to have been, give or take, a dozen. I mean, who counts, you know? The times you take the pills run together. You can't separate the scars. 12, okay? And every single one of those times that I tried to commit suicide, I was sober. Now, that doesn't make any sense. If my problem is alcohol, why am I trying to kill myself when I'm sober? Maybe because my problem is not alcohol. Maybe because my problem is lack of it. Maybe my problem is sobriety. And that's it. Bingo. Right on the money for me. I'm fine when I'm drunk. Because I don't know or care what's happening to me or happening to you. I'm blacked out. I'm traveling. I'm a traveling drunk. I like to go to the airport and buy a ticket. You know, I hate the coming out of a blackout in a strange city. I hate that. It's embarrassing. You can't ask people, where am I? You know. You have to, like, real cool, hope there's no vomit in your hair, walk down the terminal, you know, look at the newspaper, Atlanta, okay, you know, try and get home. You know, I used to do that. It was fun to me. Lots of things were fun to me. Kind of fun will kill you. But my problem was not the fact that I was drunk all the time. My problems happened in between the times I was drunk. I couldn't do life. I was miserable. And the thing with the alcohol is eventually your body says enough, okay, and you start reacting in different ways and the blackouts start happening. Do y'all remember, I love this question, I don't know why I asked this, do you remember your first blackout? No, you idiot. Of course I don't. But I remember around my first blackout and it was very interesting. You guys remember yours? I was sitting in a bar, you know, nothing new, listening to the music, and I looked at my watch and it said 8:30, just like it does now, and I listened to the music, and about 10 minutes later I looked at my watch and it said 11:45, something like that, and I was like, whoa. So real nonchalantly I asked the person next to me, so what time is it? He said 11:45, and I said, did I go anywhere? Well, when you say that to someone, they look at you like, no. And I thought, oh my God, this tequila is doing weird things to my head. And since that day, I've not had a drink of tequila. I went immediately to vodka. Because the tequila made things happen, funny things happen. And I'm also a puking drunk. I'm sorry about that. I know I don't look like a puking drunk, but I can't help it. Actually, we are very controlled. Have you ever noticed that? Normal people, when they drink too much, they just all over the place. You ever know? It's disgusting. I see it at work. I work in a casino, and they'll be sitting there on a blackjack table, drunk, and they'll throw up right on the cards, and I'm like, oh, God. Really, can't you control that better than this? Because I know alcoholics will say, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. And they'll get up, push their chair in, walk nonchalantly to the bathroom, go in, lock the door, and then vomit. We're the only people I know of that can do that. I did lose it a couple of times on the side of guys' cars, and that'll ruin a romance quickly. But guys are funny about puke up on their upholstery. I've never understood that. But by the time I'd been through the nut house three times, I was pretty desperate. Because I figured, here I was, 21 years old, I'm supposed to be just getting started, okay? Life is just supposed to be getting going. And mine feels over. Really, it does. It feels over. And so I tried yet another suicide attempt, and this particular one would have worked had not someone found me. And this time I didn't even call them to find me. They did it all by themselves. And I ended up in a hospital, and I can remember thinking, I can't even kill myself right. I'm a total failure as a human being, and I guess I'm just not supposed to die. I guess I'm just supposed to suffer for the rest of my life. So I'm just going to stay drunk and stoned till I die. And that was my plan. That was my plan. And it would have worked. It would have worked, except for I have a real problem with controlling my behavior in blackouts. If I could do what I wanted in blackouts, it'd be different. But I would go into a blackout and do something bizarre. Like, I can see me going down a freeway with a gun to my head, or someone else's head. I can see me doing that. I used to like guns. I used to like violence. I used to like the sight of blood and glass flying in all directions. Yours, preferably not mine. And I realized at that point in time that since I had tried now years of psychotherapy and all the drugs and all the everything, that I was probably doomed to the rest of my life of feeling this way. And it really was, I know that you know how I felt. I know that you know the black hole that I'm talking about. Years later, I read the words. They were pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I understand that because that's what I felt. And one night at the bar, I did it again. Had a little problem with some people because I didn't get along with people real well. And I had some money stolen. And I went over to a friend's house and I got on the phone at 2:30 in the morning. I used to do that a lot to my parents, call them at 2:30 in the morning, like they really want to hear from me at all, much less 2:30 in the morning. And I said, I got to go to a hospital. I think I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. Now, I don't know why I said that at that particular time, because I had never used those words in relation to me, ever. Ever. And they took me to a nut house, Mount Airy Psychiatric Center in Denver, and I was thrilled because I was like, cool, back to the nut house. I can do this. I'm just going to stay there. I'm not letting them let me out this time. And they tricked me. The top floor of the nut house was an alcohol treatment unit. And I was really pissed, because they wouldn't give me any Thorazine, they wouldn't give me any Dalmane, they wouldn't give me any Quaaludes. All they'd give me is a hard time. And I had to sit through Father Martin movies. Which is fine once you feel better. Okay? But my first week of sobriety was delightful. Right after the seizure, I sat on the John, and I didn't, you know, you get tired when you get down on your knees and get up on your butt and get down on your knees and get up. So I just gave up, and I sat on the toilet with a wastebasket between my knee and just came out of everywhere for almost a week. And I can remember thinking, yeah, this sobriety is great. I can see why everyone would want to do this. It sucked. And I was laying in bed one fine day, and someone came and pulled the covers off my bed, and I pulled them back up, and she pulled them back down, and I pulled them back up, and she pulled them back down, and here was this face. Now, if you look at the person next to you, you'll see it. Bright eyes, nice smile, happy, want to just punch them on sight. When you feel like I felt, do not give me that happy little AA face, doc. And she said, we're going downstairs. And I said, I'm not going downstairs. She said, I do not recall anyone asking. We're going downstairs. And I put on my little paper slippers, and I went downstairs, and they had a room in the basement with tables, you know, around. And I was in my little robe, one forward and one backward so you don't hang out, you know, and my little paper slippers. And we sat, and there was these people that looked like you. They were like, they looked like yuppies or something, you know. They were all like clean cut and smiling and dressed nice and stuff. And the head one said, I'm so and so and I'm an alcoholic. And I can remember looking at that guy and going, yeah, alcoholic. I've seen alcoholics, and trust me, buddy, you're not one of them. You're missing the coat, you're missing the bag, you're missing the tennis shoe, you're missing it, you're not. And that's all I heard in my first AA meeting. That's it. Two nights later, she came and made me go again, and I was like, oh good, this will be exciting. And I heard the same guy say he was an alcoholic. And this time I heard one other thing. Right before I left, somebody said, keep coming back. And the reason that caught my attention is because I'd been through like 6 years of get the hell out of here. You know, don't ever come back kind of stuff. And someone said, keep coming back. I thought it was a mistake. I can remember turning around and thinking, I misunderstood. I didn't hear that right. And I trudged back up. And by this point, I'm kind of liking Father Martin. You know, he's pretty entertaining. And I'm kind of liking the graham crackers and stuff. And we're doing the group therapy thing, which is great. You know, I'm good at group therapy. I have lots of practice. And I'm digging treatment, thinking it's all right. And then they're going to let me out. Okay? Well, I don't want to go because I can't do out. We already know this. And this lady who pulled my covers sat me down and said, look, if you do a few of the things that I will suggest to you, And if you continue to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is a possibility, however remote, that you might live a little bit happier than you've been living so far. And I was sort of intrigued. And I was like, all right, I'll try it, sort of, little bit, tiny. And she was very, it was funny, Diane and I were talking about this earlier, she was one of these Nazi sponsors. She used to say things to me like, look, honey, do you want sympathy? Look between shit and syphilis in the dictionary, you ain't getting it from me. All of my sponsees have heard that now, at least once. She was mean. She'd say things to me like, no, dear, you don't have to write anything. You can die. I'm like, you would let me die?
Yeah.
Better you than me.
Oh.
I thought she was about the meanest person I'd ever met in my life. But she had this this glow about her. It's hard to describe. You have to turn to the person next to you and see. You know what I mean by the glow. Okay, there was life in her eyes. There was a brightness about her that I was attracted to, and I wanted to get some of that. So I sort of tried a little kind of tiny bit to do what she told me to do. And so I sat down with my little 12 steps, and I figured this is easy enough. I'll do a step a day for 12 days and get the hell out of here. So let's see, step one, powerless over alcohol. Well, that's rather obvious. An idiot can see that. Life's unmanageable. Parts of it are. Step two, done with that one. Power greater than ourselves. Oh, forget that. Step three, willing to... No. Four, searching and feral more than... No. Five, no. Nine. Amends. I can do that. I can apologize. I am good at apologizing. So I made my little list and I went out to make my amends. And I went up to this lady's door and I knocked on her door and she opened the door and I says, hi, my name's Mac. You don't know me, but I'm an alcoholic and I have to make amends in order to stay sober. And in 1979, I slept with your husband for the weekend that you were gone on a business trip. She hit me. Bloodied my nose. I'll never forget it. And I was in such utter shock. I can't believe I didn't pound her into dirt, but I was in such utter shock that I walked back and I went home and I called my sponsor in hysterics. Sorry. My sponsor's laughing. She goes, you're such an asshole. She goes, there's little numbers in front of the steps. A one and a two and a three. Those are there for idiots like you to follow in order. I was like, that's why blondes have flat foreheads, right? So I'm going to try again, all right? We'll go back. So this, now I've been like really sober. I mean, really sober, like 3 months. And you know how we are at 3 months. You know, we're really sober, boy. We're just sober. Yeah. And the little voice came in my head and said, you know, you're only 22. You're probably really not an alcoholic. You're probably just partied a little too hard. Hung out with the wrong people, did the wrong drugs. If you just drink and don't do any drugs, you'll probably be all right. Really, I believed it. I believed it. And so I planned. I was going to go to this bar where nobody knew me. And I had $4 so that I could have two drinks. And I took three people with me who never knew that I had had a problem or had been in treatment. And off we went. And this bar was renowned for being one of the rowdiest bars west of the Mississippi. I mean, this place is famous for being rowdy, so I figured I could blend in there with just a drink or two. And I remember quite distinctly going into the bar and going from the front door to the bar itself and ordering a double kamikaze. And this was a great plan. It was well thought out and well executed. The only thing was, I blacked out after the first drink. Now, nothing will ruin a perfectly good drunk faster than blacking out on the first drink, because that's all I remember. The next thing I remember, I woke up. I was at home, and once again, I had vomit in my hair. I had to check and see if my underwear were on at all, much less frontwards. I had to find my car. I had no recollection at all of what would have happened to me. I couldn't get anyone I was with to answer the door. Years later, I found out that apparently I thought that I could get up on top of the table in the bar and take my clothes off. Now, that didn't bother anybody, but when I lit the joint, it is against the law. They asked me to put it out, and I threw it at someone, and at that point, they 86'd me from the bar naked. Okay. I hear people say, oh, you know, I found out I was alcoholic, and I was free! I was 22 years old. I was really pissed off when I found out I was alcoholic, because I figure my life's over, you know. There's not going to be any more partying. There's not going to be any more fun. There's not nothing. What am I going to do when I get married if I can't drink? Now, you can understand I could not get a date. But I was concerned with what I would do at my wedding. Okay, this is kind of how my thinking was, right? I had a real problem with relationships. I'm sure none of you can identify with that. My sponsor says asking an alcoholic how to run a relationship is like going into the paraplegic ward and asking how to run the fastest mile. She's been married 8 times. I don't ask her much about it. But at that point, I went crawling back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was determined to try and do it your way. Now, I would not have told you that to your face, but I did go back with more of an intention to try and do it your way, because I had finally accepted that my way wasn't working. So I went to meetings, and God, I hated them. God, I hated them. You people just pissed me off. I didn't want to hear about God. I didn't want to hear these little old ladies tell me I was too young to be an alcoholic. God damn it, I knew I was too young to be an alcoholic. Shut up about it already. This one little old lady says to me, honey, get the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. And I told her where I'd stick it. I was not a nice person. I used to like throw ashtrays, see how fast people could duck. Pretty fast when they're sober. Throw them at the newcomers, you might hurt them. They've been around a while, boy. They're good. When I was about 10 months sober, I got this wild hair. I'm gonna move to Las Vegas. Be a dealer. Legal kind, cards. So I did. Packed it up, moved to Las Vegas. Became a dealer, by golly. So now here I am. I'm in Las Vegas. I'm a big-time strip dealer. I'm there on the Las Vegas Strip, and I'm dealing, and life is good. And I'm getting along pretty good, and I decided to go home and visit my parents. And some of you have heard this part of my story, and I repeat it every time that I share because it's extraordinarily important to me. It was an extraordinary turning point in my sobriety, and it's an extraordinarily important lesson to learn. And if you never learn anything else in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the one lesson that I feel you must learn. And when I went home, I was about 2.5 years sober. And I was talking to some people at a meeting that I had known in treatment, and they mentioned something about how they had been at a funeral. That funeral was that beautiful woman who pulled my covers and led the way. 7 years sober, she decided she wasn't an alcoholic. She could drink. And a week later, she blew her brains out. And I was really pissed. You know, I have a real interesting rapport with my higher power. And sometimes MFing is the best I can do. And at that point in my sobriety, I realized that I was at that fork. I was either going to go where she went and just drink and screw it. Or I was going to learn that, yes, if you do drink, you do die. And that's the lesson. Okay? You can dig around with this all you want. You can play, you can come in and out. You can be a 30-day wonder, you can be a 60-day wonder, you can come in here at 90 days and quote the book. But eventually you're going to have one drink too many. You're playing Russian roulette, the bullet's going to go in your brain, you're going to be deader than hell. And that's reality. This disease will kill you. And it's not a pleasant death. It's not a pretty, delicate death. It's very unattractive.
and I've known many people in Alcoholics Anonymous since I got sober, to die as a direct result of this disease, and it's an ugly thing. And every time it happens, I get angry because it doesn't have to happen. I don't believe that people have to die so that we can live. That's horseshit. They choose to die. They choose to die. They choose to pick up the drink. They choose to die. That's why I don't have any sympathy for it as well. Because no one makes you do it. No one's ever held a gun to my head and made me drink. They've held a gun to my head, but they didn't want me to drink, per se. You know, that's funny. I always used to say, well, I'm not a prostitute. I never sold my body for money. There were other areas. This affected me very greatly, and I really decided that at this point I was going to have to do something different than I had been doing, so I really kind of dove in. And I started doing things I didn't want to do, kind of like the secretary thing and the ashtray thing, you know, and I didn't want to do any of that stuff. I don't even dump my own ashtrays, and you want me to dump yours? You know? Secretary, that means I have to be there on time? I can't do that. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And I did it. And I started going to conferences, and I started going to meetings after meetings, and I started going to meetings before meetings, and I started getting phone numbers, and I started calling people. And I woke up one morning, and I realized I'd been sober. And I felt good. And I had friends, and people liked me, and I had a place to go, and I didn't want to die anymore. And it was the most awesome feeling. I don't know if any of you remember the first day you woke up and you didn't want to die anymore. But it's a wonderful thing. You know, life is sometimes, it's just kind of like the pits, okay? Sometimes it sucks. Pits, hell, it sucks, okay? I'll just give you an example. In the last year of my life, I blew a knee out skiing, and I mean really, I tried to tear my leg off. If it weren't for the skin, it would have worked. And my mother has been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, okay? And me and God did the same thing. Don't take my mother. Don't take my mother. She's been through enough. And then I thought, okay, the alcoholic ego kicks in at just the right moment. And I thought, now I know why she had me as a kid. It was to toughen her up. Because if she can survive having me as a kid, cancer's a piece of cake. And that's how I decided to think about it. But every time I talk to her, something's a little worse than I thought it was. Something's different than I thought it was. And lately I've come to the conclusion that I have a real problem telling the difference between denial and acceptance. I don't know which is which. Okay? When they tell me something about her cancer and I get set with that and I'm okay with it, all right, then a few weeks later they tell me something else. Now, I don't know if I've been in denial or if I've accepted. Isn't that wild? Because I feel okay. Things are smooth. I'm getting along all right. I'm getting to meetings. I'm doing the things I'm supposed to be doing. So I feel like maybe it's acceptance. But then when something comes up and it's a little different or a little worse and I freak out, I think, well, it wasn't acceptance. It was denial. Now, I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody in here but me. But I like to play these mind games, right? I like to send the committee into session. I got like 50, 60 people up here. On a good day, it's 5 or 6. And they like to really, like on the freeway. Just really go, you know, they just really are out there to get me. They just love to get me. And I have had opportunities in this program to confront some of life's scariest stuff. I mean, really scary stuff. Like, you know, I used to have this problem with men. I went with the same guy for 20 years. His face changed a little bit and the names were different, but it was the same guy. And couldn't get away from this guy. He's dating two of my sponsees right now. And I know who he is. But I kept dating the same guy, you know, and over, and the same thing kept happening, and I couldn't understand. I was like, and I was sitting there on the couch with this guy one time, and I looked at him, and I thought, my God, he even looks alike. They even start to look alike. Now, that's scary. You know, when you've had nothing but crappy relationships your whole life, and then they're horrible. I mean, it's true love for like a week, okay? Then you talk, and it's over. Okay? And I did this over and over and over and over and over and over. And finally, one time, I'm sitting on the couch, and I look at this guy, and I'm like, oh, God, it's him again. And I got up, and I took the tape out of the VCR in the middle of the movie. you know. He goes, where are you going? And I says, I think I'd probably have a better time at home with my cat. And that's the last time I dated that guy. Okay? So now I'm afraid because I cannot do this. So what do I do? What do I do? Someone suggested to me, perhaps the idea is to say that you are powerless over relationships and your life has become unmanageable. You might, like, consider working the steps for this area of your life. And I'm like, really? You can do that? You can work the steps for something other than alcohol? Cool. So I started doing that and I figured God wanted me to be single. That's it. I'm supposed to be single. I can't do this relationship thing. I'm unsuccessful in this area. It's just never going to work. So I am going to be this, like, really happy, productive, single person. Period. And I went to speak at a conference in Oklahoma. Now, you got to understand that my type, I live in Vegas, okay? My type's like Italian, Vinny, you know, the hairy chest, three-piece suit, pinky ring, Corvette, and really bad attitude. That's my type of guy, right? So I go to Oklahoma, and here's this Oaky guy. And he's got on jeans and a boots, you know, and he got a truck and stuff. And it's like Oaky guy, you know? I don't know anything about Okies. I've never actually owned one, and don't tell him I said that. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at this Oaky guy, and we're talking, you know, and something's happening here. And you got to understand, this was not my idea, okay? My idea is Mr. Three-Piece Butthead back in Vegas, okay? Here I am in Wagner, Oklahoma, okay? And here's this guy, and he's saying things like, I mean, and I imagine, and do what, and I'm fixing to, you know, and I get on the plane to come home and I realize that it's him. Now what do I do? First of all, I don't do Okies. Second of all, he lives in Oklahoma. Now what do I do? Well, God said, kiddo, all I have been waiting for is for you to give it up. Okay? All I wanted you to do was say, I can't do this. I'm not good at this. I give up. I surrender. Okay? And God said, here, have an Okie. So I said, okay, we've been married over 3 years now. Quite successfully. We even still like each other. It's amazing. My long-term relationship for me is like 3 weeks. Okay? And I've been together with him now almost 5 years. Those are the kind of miracles like you were talking about. Families getting back together. People coming into your life. And the secret to the whole thing is give up every notion of what you think you should do. Give up every notion of what you think is best for you. If you're not in a relationship right now, if you're thinking you want to be in a relationship right now, give up your notion of what you think your type is. Because you don't have any idea. Surrender. You know, I love that saying that if I had been made to write down when I first got sober what I thought my life would be like 10 years later, I could not have come close. I could not have come close. I have had opportunities to travel all over the world. I've been to meetings in languages I don't even speak. And it was the most fabulous. I went to a meeting in Germany, and they shared in German. And I know how to ask where the toilet is in German. That's it. All right? And they're sharing, and I'm like, and they had me share, and they're like, you know. And we got up, and we said the prayer, and I felt wonderful. It doesn't have anything to do with the words. It's the music of the Spirit. Okay? It's something that happens. When those of us who have literally, I hope this does not offend anyone who's a little on the freaky side religiously, we are literally born again in this room. We have destroyed any vestige of life as we knew it before we came here. We have managed to destroy most of our personal relationships. We have managed to destroy our physical health. We have managed to usually destroy our work record, to say nothing of our legal record. Is that judge still here? I don't think I have any warrants anymore. Do they expire after like 3 years? Unless it's murder or something? I was in a blackout. I don't remember. I have not had to go to jail and stay since the day I got sober. I've been to jail several times because I have to go there. When people tell me I have to go there for service, then that's what I have to do. Okay? When people ask me to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous, then I have learned not to say no. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has given me every single thing that I am and have today. There isn't anything that you see up here that Alcoholics Anonymous did not create. Nothing. I had nothing. I was bottomed out in every area of my life when I came here. I have an older brother who wouldn't even speak to me. I have a younger sister who hated me so much, it was palpable. My parents used to make her come down from college on the weekends and visit her poor dear sister in the nut house. I'm sure she loved that. And do you know that 4 years ago my sister asked me to be her maid of honor? Do you know that I'm godmother to her child? Those things don't happen to people like me. Do you know where I work that they have made me a boss? Obviously, they don't know what they've done. But what's so amusing is that I am the person that will tell you you can no longer have anything to drink. Is that cool? I let them go a lot further than the other floor people do, though. I have a floor guy say to me, I'm cutting that guy off. He's drunk, and I'll look, and I'll go, oh, nah. He's a long way from being drunk. Wait till his eyes cross or he falls off the chair or something. Then we'll cut him off. I just have a little bit higher tolerance. I don't know, you know. But the beauty that surrounds me, even in the midst of things like my mother having cancer and my knee exploding, and you know, marriage is really hard work, especially when you wait. You know, I was single for a long, long time, and now I have to do this, like, compromise thing, and I don't like it at all. He's supposed to do what I want to do when I want to do it, and he won't. Okies are stubborn. On top of being gorgeous, stubborn. And sometimes we butt heads a little bit because he's also sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he has a big resentment against me this weekend because he's co-chairing a young people's roundup at home and I'm not there. Oops. But I told him, I said, sweetie, trust me, you're better off without me telling you how to do it. And it's true. But the thing that I want to impress upon you is when I came to you in 1980, I weighed 92 pounds. My hair was coming out in handfuls. My liver stuck out like a sideways pregnancy. I had deep, dark circles behind my eyes, and there was no one home. They were clouded. They were shady. There was no one home. I had that three-word vocabulary I told you about. I was perpetually miserable. I don't think I'd smiled for over a year. And I came to you, and I didn't even want to get sober. All I wanted was a better way. All I wanted was just a tiny little piece of happiness. All I wanted was to feel better. You know, I just wanted to feel better. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to feel like I thought other people felt when they felt good. And I came in here and God put the most amazing group of people in front of me. And he works it out really well. You know, if y'all get out of the way, God takes really good care of what happens to you. If you get out of the way, he'll get a real good sponsor for you. He'll get a good relationship for you if that's what you're supposed to have. The only thing is that in return, I have to accept the bad things too and know that they're not directed at me. God did not give my mother cancer to piss me off. Okay? God did not give my mother cancer at me. And it's like we were talking before, and I'm sorry I'm so emotional about this, because I didn't even like my mother when I got here. I know that his hand is on her too. I know that he never once since I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous has failed to take care of me. Never. Every time that I have been on the brink of falling off the cliff, God has been there to catch me. And I've learned something very important. There's a miracle in this room. Okay? It's the most wonderful miracle that you've ever seen in your life. It takes people like me and turns them into human beings. It gets us sober. It gets us happy. It gets us all those things we were looking for. And it's free. Okay? All you have to do is follow certain steps. All you have to do is listen to those who went before you. All you have to do is try. You don't have to do this perfectly. Nobody does this perfectly. All you have to do is try. You must suit up and show up. You must attend Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have a lot of tolerance for people who stand up here and say, I didn't do a thing. God keeps me sober. Well, good for them. My higher power requires my active participation. He requires, first of all, that I don't pick up a drink. Rule number one. He requires my active participation. I believe I had his grace for the first year, and now it is up to me to continue to do what it's going to take for me to keep getting the goodies. And since I've always been into getting the goodies, I'm going to continue doing what it takes. It's real simple for me. And I have seen so many miracles since I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous that it has made me just like get so excited for the next one. And it doesn't even have to be mine anymore. I get off on other people's miracles, you know? And I want to just tell you sitting here tonight, if you have not felt the music of the Spirit, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, please don't make the mistake of leaving a moment too soon. Because God is extraordinarily old. Really, really old. And you know how old people move. Okay? So it takes him a little time. But he may have your miracle maybe 5 or 6 minutes from now ready to happen. And if you decide to blow it off and get drunk, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss the miracle. And I want you to be here to get your miracle so that I can watch. Because I get off on it. It's better than any drug I ever took. Thank you very much for having me. And God, I need a cigarette. Get out there and smoke it.